so glad we're all back together.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We are having a lot of hockey talk so far, but we're going to our first guest. So we're going to bring on James Gordon, of the sports editor of the Ottawa Citizen, to the phone.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
On the phone with us is James Gordon. James, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. The Senators are tied 2-2 with the New York Rangers, and we're curious if you're surprised at this point of the Sens' resilience.
I'd say a little. I mean, I said at the beginning of the series that I wouldn't be surprised if the Senators managed to come away with it. I mean, obviously, when you look at the seeding and the difference in the points during the regular season and all that, it looks like the Rangers are a heavy favorite. But, I mean, going into the series, I think the Senators had a lot of confidence because they had beaten the Rangers 3 out of 4 times in the regular season. And for some reason, in some of those games, Henrik Lundqvist doesn't look like the goalie that we all know him to be, which is one of the best in the league. But he seems to have some hiccups, I guess, against the Senators. And also, he doesn't exactly have a sterling win-loss record in the playoffs either. So, you know, it was a bit of a blessing in disguise in a way that the Senators wound up finishing the season with 3 straight losses because they dropped down. And it looked for a long time that they would have been, you know, almost guaranteed to play the Bruins. But it just worked out that they got the Rangers, and they're obviously having some success.
You know, Daniel Alfredsson has been out since the hit from Carl Hagelin. He didn't make the trip to New York. You know, do you think we'll see him at some point the rest of the series?
You know, it's always hard to say with a concussion, right? I mean, he already had, he's had a couple, I think, in his career, and bounced back quickly from those. But, you know, you just never know. These guys have to, you know, get up in the morning and be able to walk around and not be dizzy when they're playing with their kids. And I guess that's priority number one for them, and then they can start thinking about hockey. But it's a funny thing. I mean, you could go a few straight days feeling completely fine and then go for a skate, and then you're kind of wobbling all over the place after. So, you know, you don't get the impression that with Alfredsson it's a really severe thing. But, again, it's tough to speculate on concussions because you just never know.
James, get back to the goaltending questions. You mentioned Henrik Lundqvist has had moments of hiccups this series and hasn't been the X factor that a lot of people expected him to be. Has Craig Anderson's elevated play essentially eliminated that goaltending advantage the Rangers have had?
Well, he's definitely kind of matching them save for save, and Anderson is one of those goalies who seems to rise to the occasion. I mean, he had kind of a slow start to the season. But once the game started getting important, he elevated his game, and he benefited too. I mean, he missed a month near the end of the season after cutting his hand, and he couldn't play. And it was an opportunity for him to get some rest because the Senators were, you know, living and dying with him all season. I mean, they did not have, until they traded for Ben Bishop late in the season, a viable option as a backup. So Anderson was getting a lot of work. And, you know, he picked up his game after he came back and into the playoffs, and I think he has a history of that. I mean, he almost stole a season a couple years ago, or a few years ago, with the Colorado Avalanche, a young team that snuck in the playoffs, and they almost managed to knock off their opponent, the Sharks, that year. So, you know, I've always thought that Craig Anderson has the ability to be one of the better goalies in the league, and I think he's shown that in this series.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined on the line by James Gordon, former Winnipegger and Ottawa Citizen sports editor. James, is the pressure to succeed in the playoffs impacting Erik Karlsson?
You know what? It's one of those things where the Rangers knew that he would be one of the most important players for the Senators, and they're keying in on him. I mean, they're trying to take away his point shot, which has been deadly all season for the Senators, and trying to rough him up a bit. I mean, you saw early in the series, you have 6'7" Brian Boyle giving him about 10 machine gun punches in the face,
yeah,
just to kind of shake him up a bit, and that turned into a big brouhaha after that. But you know, with Karlsson, he's not a big guy. He's being noticed by the league now. So you know, when he runs into situations like he's in now, where teams are going to key in on him and try and rough him up a bit, he's just going to have to learn how to play through that or avoid it altogether as best he can.
Now, you talk about the Rangers shutting down Erik Karlsson. Well, on the Rangers side of things, Brad Richards and Marian Gaborik have been pretty quiet this series. You know, how have the Senators, you know, shut these two down?
Well, it's funny. I mean, those are the players you would expect to be making the difference. And as I mentioned, Boyle with three goals and some other kind of gritty players. And that's what it was like early in the series for the Senators, too. I mean, they were getting goals from, you know, Chris Neal types. And, you know, I don't really have an answer for that. I mean, obviously there you have shut down players on each side trying to take out the top players from the other team. And you saw the Senators break through a little bit the last game with Milan Mikolic and Kyle Turris managing an overtime goal. So it's just the way it is. I mean, the opposition is going to do everything it can to make life hard on the star players, and that's why, you know, those third and fourth line players are so important in the playoffs.
Switching back to Ottawa's lineup, Winnipeg's Mark Stone has now been eliminated from the WHL playoffs with the Brandon Wheat Kings. He's been practicing with the Senators on a line with Kyle Turris and Foligno. Are we going to see him in the upcoming games?
Paul McLean is really coy this series about what his lineup is going to be. I mean, the secrecy we all know and hate from the regular season about injuries and lineups and all that is kind of ratcheted up. So, you know, he practiced again with the team in the morning skate, and the way it looked apparently today was that he would be in the lineup, but Paul McLean obviously wasn't revealing that hand quite yet. But, you know, this is a team where, with Alfredson out, they need some players with hands who can score some points, and obviously Mark Stone lit it up with the Wheat Kings this year. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in there, and it could be as early as tonight.
So what do you attribute it to? Like, how has Paul McLean been able to get this team playing as effectively as they have? Like, is he doing something special? Is it just that this team is that, you know, they have a good chemistry? Or has this first-year head coach really done something in Ottawa?
Well, you know, he knows how to manage his players. He knows what makes them tick, and he knows how to get them to elevate their game when they have to. And you know what? A part of it, I think, just with this series, is the Senators came into it really loose. I mean, to outside observers who haven't watched the team and watched these two teams play each other this season, you'd look and say, oh, the Rangers are first. They almost won the President's Trophy. They're going to completely slaughter these guys. But if you watched them during the season, you knew it was a lot closer. But, you know, the Senators didn't feel that pressure going in that the Rangers would. There's extremely high expectations in New York for this team. And, you know, the Senators, I think fans here are kind of looking at this series is gravy. They didn't expect to be going to playoff games, and neither did the players probably at the beginning of the season. So everything from here on is a bonus, and you can play a lot more loose that way.
Jason Spezza has a pair of assists in four games in this series. Do you expect him to reemerge and possibly, you know, hopefully put the puck in the net a little bit?
Well, that's the hope. I mean, he has a bit of a checkered playoff pass. He's had years where he's been completely ineffective, and then he's had years like 07 when they went to the Cup Final, and he's a point-of-game player. You know, maybe it's that the Rangers are, you know, play a tight defensive system, and you know, Lundqvist is Lundqvist, and he's tough to rack up points on. But I guess the hope is that he would emerge, and he's going to have to, I mean, at some point. You can't rely on guys like Chris Neal and those types to score every goal. You need some chipping in from the big guns too. So we'll see. That's what they want, and I'm sure. And I mean, Jason Spezza is aware of that. He's said already that he needs to start producing a little more. So you know, you never know. But they're aware of the issue, and I'm sure they're working on ways to kind of free him up a bit. It'll be tougher on the road though, because that's where Tortorella gets his matchups.
You know, James, it's interesting that the Sens have never led in this series, but somehow it still remains knotted at two games apiece. How have they been able to play from behind without panicking?
You know what? It's something they've done all season. I mean, the nickname here for a lot of the season was the Cardiac Kids, because they would fall behind 2-3 goals, and it was never over. I mean, they just had a belief that there was that they had the scoring ability to come back. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think they did that early in the season against Rangers. They were down something like 3-0 and stormed back in the third period to win a game. So it's old hat to them to be behind, and they've played in that spot before. And, you know, for some reason, it just mentally doesn't get to them.
All right, James. Well, Willie, thank you for coming on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and wish your Senators luck in the remaining playoffs.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, James. All right. We're going to head to break, and this is the Leo Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Listening to the Leo Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the home team, all the games on the numerous HD big screens, and you can be sure to join the Leo Curve Hockey crew for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Michael, weren't you just at the Cheer Bar and Grill?
I drove by there last night. The lineup was out the door. I honestly think they were having a party in the parking lot.
And but you still somehow, you kind of flashed your IC badge and you got yourself in there.
Got myself in. They just did some renovations there a few weeks ago. A great atmosphere to watch a game. Numerous TVs in very well-placed locations. You know, you go to a lot of these bars, they have a lot of TVs, but sometimes they're just in terrible locations. You're getting a bad viewing angle.
Crooked neck.
Yeah, hurt your neck, stiff. You got to take a little muscle relaxers. Not at the Cheer.
You know, the cheer Bar and Grill is actually a lot of fun. We host the Jets away games there, and we always have a blast. We give away a lot of prizes, and it's a really good crew. They've got a really good staff there, so be sure to check out the Cheer Bar and Grill.
You know, going back, we just played the Rangers a goal song. You know, the Rangers are heading back to MSG tonight, and I love that goal song. It seems like everyone in the crowd at MSG is fired up. You know, they're pumped at the Rangers. But then you have the whole crowd going, whoa. I think it's great.
So you're a big fan of the Rangers song?
I'm a fan of arena music and production. I did an interview with Kyle from the Jets and posted on the illegalcurve.com site. But it really, the fans have a lot to do creating the atmosphere in the games. I mean, in L.A., Chicago, St. Louis, they all have organs. You know, it really brings in the mood, along with, you know, the rowdiness of the fans.
Darren, what are you expecting from the Game 5 between the Senators and the Rangers?
Well, like James Gordon mentioned, Henrik Lundqvist was expected to be the X factor in this series. He's had some hiccups throughout this series. He's, you know, had 2 3 goal games, one in New York, one in Ottawa in the last game. I think he'll be happy to return to MSG, his friendly confines there. But I'm expecting more out of the Vezina Trophy candidate in Lundqvist. You know, he has had his hiccup games, and the Ottawa Senators, their big guns aren't essentially getting it done with Jason Spezza, you know, being held goalless. The big question is he going to be able to, get some more shots on that?
Well, as James Gordon just talked about in our interview with him, he said that this team can't rely on Chris Neal to be scoring goals and have an expectation to win. You also really can't be trailing in the entire series. And, you know, just because by virtue of the fact that you're winning in overtime, you're still in it. You know, the truth is that Henrik Lundqvist, his goals against average is 1.97. He's got a .940 save percentage. He's still playing a pretty good game. It's just the fact that Craig Anderson has managed to match it. I think he's got a .922 save percentage and a 2.24 goals against average. So Craig Anderson's, you know, he's playing extremely efficiently, extremely well. He's giving the Senators a lot of confidence back there, and that's the other thing. What's also very interesting to note, and as we talked about with James, is the fact that where is Marian Gaborik? Where is Brad Richards? What are these guys doing? Like, where have they gone?
I know, I think Gaborik was actually, you know, getting reduced ice time by Tortorella. The thing about Torts is, if you're playing well, he'll keep throwing you out there. That's how you know you're having a good game. He's a pretty blunt and straightforward head coach, which is why the guys and their team like them. But what's been clear about the series is it's coming down to the third and fourth line guys. And you look at a guy like Brian Boyle, you know, wasn't a top scorer in the regular season, but he's a big body. You know, he's about 6'7". He walked by me in the dressing room earlier this year, and you just, you know, you look up at him and just are, you know, in awe.
Which is amazing considering you're 6'5".
Right.
I'm a monster. No, but he's a tall guy. And we saw, you know, we got to know him a little in the 24/7, which was great also. But he's having a big series. You know, Mike Rupp, 0 points, but he had 2 big goals in the Winter Classic. He's got a cup-winning goal with the Devils. You know, Ruslan Fedotenko's got some cup experience. And I think that this cup experience that all the guys in the Rangers have, you know, will help them, you know, with that mentality of working hard and coming out with a W.
The biggest problem that the Rangers are facing right now, as Remus just talked about, was the fact that the series leading goal scorer is Brian Boyle. He has 3 goals. And the series leading points getter, Brian Boyle, he has 3 points. So, I mean, that's problematic. I mean, yes, the scoring has been, I think, 17 combined goals between these two games, these two teams. So it's not like it's been a high-scoring affair that's afforded these guys an opportunity. But with the exception of Richards and Gabrick, both got two assists. They have 3 points total, a goal and two assists each. And both those assists for both players were achieved on the power play in the last game. And they scored, I believe they scored, each scored in the, Richards scored in the four goal game for the Senator, for the Rangers, and I can't remember when Gabrick got his goal. But the point is that they haven't risen to the occasion. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, John Tortorella, you know, even though he doesn't treat the media with kid gloves, he's sure treating his star players. And if anybody needs proof of that, just ask Ezzie Brooksy Ginsburg, who was treated to the Tortorella touch here in Winnipeg.
Well, guys like Derek Stepan, Brandon Dubinsky, Ruslan Fedotenko, you know, those three players combined have 1 point. Fedotenko has an assist. I don't know where these guys have been, but like you said, you know, with Gabrick and Richards not putting up, you know, the you know, 1 point plus per game, you expect to get more scoring from, you know, your secondary sources, your second, third, fourth line. But especially Marian Gabrick, 7 shots on goal in 4 games. I don't know what he's doing out there. This is supposed to be your guy who's going to put the puck in the net.
I think it's becoming clear that for the rest of the playoffs, we're not going to see that high-scoring Rangers team that we thought. They do play a more of a defensive style.
Definitely.
And
yeah,
they've definitely shut down the Sens' top guys. I mean, you look at a guy like Dan Girardi, not really known for his offensive talent, but, you know, he's a guy kind of like a much better version of Mark Stewart here. He's, you know, he's a gritty guy, good in the locker room, you know, brings that tough persona that rubs off on the whole team. He was up there with Mark Stewart for blocks. And right now he's got 22 blocks in the series. His partner, he's been playing with Ryan McDonough, another young defenseman who's progressing very well. He's got 13 blocks. So they've really gotten in the shooting lanes and used their physical play to shut down the Senators' top line.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens against the Senators and the Senators and the Rangers tonight. You can listen to that game on TSN Radio starting at 6 o'clock. The question I have for you boys is, who's going to win the game, Darren?
Going back to MSG, you got to give it to the Rangers tonight. You know, the series is tied 2-2. They essentially had, Ottawa's never led in this series. That's a stat that I think should really stand out. They seem to only, take the lead in overtime and win the game. So never having a lead and playing against a goaltender like Henry Lundqvist, you know, we said he has had his hiccups in this series. But the Rangers in their own barn with those crazy fans, as Remus enjoys, you got to give it to the Rangers.
You know, they're in Madison Square Garden. John McEnroe is going to be there. You know, friend of Henrik Lundqvist. They're, you know, they jam together.
Yeah.
You saw that in 24/7.
Great band.
He's been making a... That was some jam sesh. It was. Lundqvist, McEnroe. Who else was there? Was Chad Smith from Red Hot Chili Peppers in there? I'm just making that up.
I can't remember.
But yeah, he's there. Spike Lee's coming out. It's going to be a party Saturday night in New York. I'm taking the Rangers. I think they're going to grab the series by the horns here. And I think the Sens were able to, you know, make up Alfredson's loss last game with some scoring, but I think they're going to miss him. I don't know if Mark Stone will be able to do the job, so I'm going to take Rangers.
It will be interesting to see how Mark Stone responds. If he is in the lineup, as James alluded to, we don't know whether that is or isn't the case because Paul McLean is keeping that close to the vest, as they say. So we'll find out tonight, starting at 6 o'clock, whether the Rangers and the Senators are who will win that game. I'm not going to make a prediction.
You'll be able to hear at tonight on 1290.
Absolutely.
CFRW.
Keep it locked.
Okay, well, we're going to move to another series. We've got the St. Louis Blues against the San Jose Sharks. And we're going to have Jeremy Rutherford up in about 10 minutes to talk about that series. But we're going to do our preliminary thoughts. What are you guys thinking so far from this series? I mean, it's been an interesting one. The Blues are leading, you know, 3-1, 3 games to 1. They dropped the first game and then have come back and won the last three. Are you, Remus, you know, surprised that St. Louis has really been able to, you know, kind of push around the Sharks, considering that the Sharks really are the veteran team?
The questions about the Blues coming into the series were, would they have enough scoring depth to match up with the Sharks? And, you know, they're a relatively young team, and would they have, you know, be able to compete with the Sharks, who are the more experienced team? They've been there before. And it's been the same old from the Sharks. Will Joe Thornton ever come up and, you know, be that dominating presence he is in the regular season, in the playoffs? And so far, time and time again, he's proven no. I mean, in the 2010 Olympics and past, you know, playoffs, he's been, he just hasn't been the guy that the Sharks needed. And one guy who has been the guy for the Blues, one of my favorite players, Andy McDonald. He's coming back, you know, missed a lot of the season or last few seasons with constant concussion problems. You know, what's called? He got away from a hit from TJ Gagliardi. He was lucky not to have an injury from there. He's been the top point getter for the Blues, controlling the play. And he's really carried over. He was a top guy, you know, playing with the Ducks during their cup run. And he's carried over his playoff experience to the Blues this season.
So, you know, Darren, I'd ask you really, because if you look at playoff experience, because everybody always kind of goes back to that as the default and says, okay, you know, this team is the more experienced team. This is the one that should know how to do it. The Blues do not have, you know, a tremendous amount of experience. They have two players who have played over 60, you know, NHL playoff games, and that's no surprise, Jason Arnott and Jamie Langbrenner. The Sharks, though, have eight players who have played over 60 playoff games. So how is it that this young Blues team is doing what they're doing?
I think it's simply the system that that Ken Hitchcock has set up in St. Louis. He's done a great job, obviously, with his goaltending tandem in Halak and... Halak and Elliott there. But the system they play, like I was talking about earlier, when they came into Winnipeg and played the Jets, not a super exciting brand of hockey, but very disciplined. They seem to play a very positional game. Defensively, obviously, they know how to get into the passing lanes and take those passing lanes away from teams. I think San Jose, obviously, being more of a veteran team, they rely on knowing where each other are. And St. Louis is very good, very disciplined at taking away those passing lanes. So it's been surprising. I had San Jose going deep into the Western Conference rounds, and St. Louis has really shut them down.
You know, I love seeing St. Louis back in the playoffs. You know, the city, they've got championship fever. The Cardinals won the World Series in October, and they just got their, you know, lovely rings for the World Series. But the Blues in the 90s, you know, they made the playoffs. I think it was 20 or so straight season. So that city, they got hockey fever there. And hopefully, I'd like to see the Blues advance in this round. They haven't been. They've never won a Stanley Cup. So maybe this will be the year. I don't know if they have the scoring to go. But hey, you know, they keep playing like they're playing. You never know what can happen.
As far as the Sharks go, I'm really wondering, where's Joe Pavelski? Where's Patrick Marleau? Between these guys, they've got, you know, 18 shots on net between the two of them in four games. I'm really wondering, you know, where these guys are. You talk about veteran presence in the playoffs, and when guys like that, especially Patrick Marleau, I don't know where he's been, but he's got no points. Somehow he's a plus one, but he's just, you know, invisible.
Well, last game, you know, at the end of the game, the Sharks were putting on some real pressure in the third period. They controlled the puck for a long time, and they had the power play. And Patrick Marleau takes what was a terrible penalty, putting the Blues on the power play. And, you know, what's even more frustrating if you're the Sharks is they have all these great chances on the power play. They're spending a lot of time in the Blue zone controlling a puck. And then the Blues go on the power play. They take a shot, like bounces up in the air off Elliott's helmet, you know, comes down, and they, you know, get an easy goal. It's just, you know, really deflating for the Sharks there. And that was the end of the game.
It's been 10 years since the Blues have last won a playoff round in the playoffs. And so what's interesting, actually, is that the road team has held the advantage. They've won three of the four games. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. The good news for Blues fans, though, is that the Blues behind the Red Wings had the number two home record in the league during the regular season. So the expectation is that they'll be able to close it out when, you know, they return to St. Louis. The interesting thing from the guys that were telling us, because they were in St. Louis on their way to Drew's wedding, was the fact that the talk about the Blues wasn't as prevalent as they anticipated. They thought maybe there would be a little more excitement. We'll talk to Jeremy Rutherford about that coming on the other side of the break, but it was just interesting that there isn't that much discussion about, you know, St. Louis Blues hockey yet.
Well, as Remus said, the St. Louis Cardinals are coming off a World Series championship. It was opening day just a couple weeks ago, and I think that's still fresh in their memory. This is Missouri. This is St. Louis, and we have to remember that, yes, they've had a team for a very long time. They were part of that expansion in the late 1970s in the NHL, but this is a young team, like you said. It's been how long since they've won a playoff series? I think they need to win that first playoff series and continue to win in order for that that buzz to grow in St. Louis.
Well, that segment was brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Make sure to catch all the playoff games on their numerous big screens. We'll have Jeremy Rutherford on the other side of the break. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm David Minuk, the host for today. Michael Remus, the sometime analyst on the Illegal Curve program, also the heavily important to the IllegalCurve.com website. You can follow us on IllegalCurve.com, on Twitter, at IllegalCurve, as well as on Facebook. The man to my left is Darren Bauming, our sometimes guest in the, or friend, I should say, at the press box. Sits with us, has a pregame with Ezra. He always has a good time, always has a lot of insight.
It's strange not being in the press box and seeing you guys, because it seems like that's the only place I saw you all year was game day in MTS Center, and it's good to see you outside of the office, as we like to call it.
You know, I'm a little embarrassed. I'm not in a suit right now, Darren. I didn't get a chance to dress up for you today.
I know. You guys are seeing my neck for the first time ever. I'm normally tied up tight.
I'm not going to lie. I've spent the last hour, 2 hours now, looking for M&Ms.
Yeah.
I've been scouring the studio for M&Ms. We're going to have Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Dispatch on fairly soon. So we're going to continue the talk about the St. Louis series and what the Sharks have to do to be able to get back into the series. So, Darren, what are your real expectations? Like, if you had to say, put it on this man's shoulders, who is it? The goaltending? Is it the forward? What is going to change for San Jose to get back into the series?
Well, Antti Niemi has been all right. You know, he has a .255 goals against average. His save percentage is a respectable .912. He's a Stanley Cup winning goaltender, and that's something a lot of people can easily put out of their mind, because he's not a big name goaltender, and he won it that 1 year with Chicago, and then they essentially let him go, said, you know, find your greener pastures. But the way Brian Elliott has been playing in relief of the injured Halak, it's tough to beat a goalie like that, especially, like I was saying in the last segment, the defensive game that St. Louis plays. It's boring. It's not the most exciting hockey to watch, but it's extremely effective in shutting down, it has been extremely effective in shutting down St. Louis' big guns. Or, sorry, San Jose's big guns.
You know, one thing San Jose has failed to do so far in the series is score on the power play. They only have two power play goals, and you would think San Jose would have more. You know, in comparison, 10 different players on Philadelphia have a power play goal. And as you say, you know, in the playoffs, it's cliche, but it really does come down to special teams and how you're going to react when the other team is sent to the penalty box.
You know, the other thing also that we're really seeing with the St. Louis team, which we've seen all season with them, is that they're doing it by committee. 13 players on this team have at least 1 point. So you're not seeing... You know, they can't shut down Backes and say, okay, well, now the Blues are done because he's not scoring. They're not limited to just one player or two players. So it really has been interesting to see how Ken Hitchcock, I mean, he's a mastermind. You know, whether you like his style or don't like his style, whether you like the way his teams play, the reality is he's a chess master. And he really is. He's shown it year after year, team after team, wherever he goes. You know, it'll be really interesting to see how this... I personally think the Blues are going to finish them off, but we're going to find out from an expert. We're going to talk to Jeremy Rutherford right now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Well, we have Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Blues beat writer. He's on the phone with us. Jeremy, how are you doing?
Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah, good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're good, Jeremy. We're good. We're not as good as you guys, though. You guys are up 3-1, so that's what we're interested in finding out. How is it that the Yaroslav Halak, he's out with an injury. Do you know what his status is right now?
Yeah, it's it doesn't look good right now. He's missed the past couple games, and he won't dress again tonight. In fact, I noticed he didn't even have a stall in the locker room. He's got an ankle injury, and in San Jose, when the team spent the last couple days in San Jose, he was wearing a boot. No, he didn't wear that when the team arrived back in St. Louis. But, I don't know. I think maybe the perception of wearing a boot gets blown out of proportion a little bit. They're just trying to, you know, keep an eye on that ankle and hope that it would heal. But I think everybody in the Blues organization would like to finish this series off and give Jarl some rest and not have to worry about the idea of using Jake Allen in a playoff series here. Just he's got a bright future as a Blues prospect, but right now it's Brian Elliott carrying the load, and you don't see Jarl playing at least for the next few days.
So if he did return, or when he does return, will there be a goaltending controversy in St. Louis?
Well, I don't think so. I think people here in St. Louis are pretty used to the situation that both guys play a lot, and both guys have played well all season long, and for whatever reason, the schedule has just worked out for them. Guys have, you know, played well, gotten a shutout, and then earned that next start, and there really hasn't been the controversy that you might think having two high-caliber goalies.
Brian Elliott stepped in for Halak and has really played very well. You know, what has impressed you about his play so far?
I just think where he's come from. I mean, when the Blues signed Brian Elliott to a one-year, two-way, $600,000 deal, it was to go into a battle for the backup job behind Yaroslav Halak with Ben Bishop. And Brian Elliott, you got to say it, barely made the team out of training camp. They wanted to go with Ben Bishop, but I think because Yaroslav Halak had a tough camp, they elected to go with the guy who had more experience, Brian Elliott. And then since then, he's just taken the job and run with it. So, you know, in terms of what has surprised me, it's everything. I mean, the fact that you can sign a guy to a two-way contract and he comes in and leads the league in goals against and save percentage and, you know, has nine shutouts on the season, the whole story's been remarkable.
Jeremy, you mentioned that people in St. Louis wouldn't expect a goaltending controversy because Halak and Elliott have both played so much time. With Brian Elliott playing 38 games in the regular season, has that really proven dividends or paid dividends in needing him now in a playoff series?
Yeah, I think so. It would have been, you know, a different situation had Yaroslav Halak played a bulk of the games and now all of a sudden you turn to Brian Elliott. That's, I can only boil it down that simple, is when Brian Elliott went into Game 2 when Yaroslav Halak got injured in the inadvertent collision with Barrett Jackman, you know, people didn't even blink. Nobody was looking at the net saying, you know, how are the Blues going to win this now with Brian Elliott? The team is so comfortable with him and they've been that comfortable with Yaroslav Halak this season too that literally no one blinked. And in these past two games, Brian Elliott went into San Jose and played really well. And you go back to game four of the regular season, it was Brian Elliott's first time on the ice in a Blues uniform making his debut, and he went into San Jose and won. So there was precedent there, you know, him going into a hostile environment, that particular building, and playing well, and he did it the past two games. So whatever you see Brian Elliott do right now, you know, Blues fans have been watching it all season long.
Now, we spoke just a few minutes ago about the defensive style that the Blues play. Do you think the goaltending has been that sparkling, or is it more a result of the type of system that the team plays in front of them?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's hard to, you know, get it down to an answer because, I think they all play a part. I think Ken Hitchcock's system, defensive style, forwards, getting back to forwards deserve credit. I think the way the defense transitions the puck out of the zone, how quickly they do it, guys like Chris Russell and Alex Pietrangelo and Kevin Shattenkirk, I think that plays a role too. And I think the goalies have been good. But, you know, some people that are starting to watch the team now, even some media folks, they say, well, we can see now why the goalies' numbers are so lofty because of the system and the way the defense gets the puck out of zone, clears those second and third chances. And, you know, maybe to a degree there's some truth to that, but I think most of the year, all of the year, in fact, the goalies have been outstanding.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We are joined by Jeremy Rutherford, Blues beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, with the exception of Jason Arda and Jamie Langenbrunner and a few others, this team is fairly short on veteran leadership. So how does Coach Hitchcock have such a relatively inexperienced team, playing with such consistency?
Yeah, I think it's because the team's been pretty consistent all year. If memory serves, they haven't lost three in regulation all season. The big deal after last season was they needed to get a couple guys in here because a year ago the Blues' highs were too high and their lows were too low. They rode a roller coaster. So you bring Jason Arnott and Jamie Langenbrunner in, and you still have guys like Barrett Jackman and David Backes, and they did a tremendous job this year of just kind of stopping everything in its tracks before it became a big issue. And I think that's why they've been consistent. But even with that said, going into the playoffs this year, Ken Hitchcock's biggest concern was, you know, how are we going to be now that the emotions are going to be so high? You know, we're a green team. We're playing perhaps the most experienced playoff team in the playoffs when you talk about a San Jose club that's gone to the Western Conference Finals the past two seasons. So that was a clear advantage for the Sharks. And, you know, admittedly, the Blues are learning on the fly, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. You know, they haven't trailed in the series since Marty Havlat scored the game winner double overtime in game one. The Blues have been in the lead every game since. So I think they're getting into some tough situations and nobody knows how they're going to respond. And so far, for the most part, they've responded like a veteran club.
Andy McDonald is another veteran people are mentioning on this team. Now, beyond the 7 points, 3 goals he's put up in these 4 playoff games, he's missed 57 in the regular season. How important has his return been, beyond just his point production?
Oh, big time. He was lost in the third game of the season, and as you mentioned, he missed 51 games with a concussion. He came back, and, you know, with Andy McDonald, when he decided to come back, everybody knew that it was time, trusted him, because he's not going to come back a moment sooner than he's ready. He's been through the concussion thing before, and he came back, and he lit it up right away. It was like he didn't miss a beat. And then the shoulder injury, he got hit in Carolina, missed 6 games, and that led right into the playoffs. And even Andy McDonald himself was concerned, you know, how am I going to be going into the playoffs? And, you know, just like after the concussion, he hasn't missed a beat with the 7 points. And he's been terrific. He got leveled. I don't know if you guys saw the hit by TJ Gagliardi earlier in this series. And a lot of people thought there might have been more than a 2-minute penalty or even a suspension against Gagliardi. And it didn't come. And Andy McDonald's way of responding, according to him, is, let's go put some points up and win some games. And he's done that. He's a small guy. I don't know how much you guys have been around him. He's one of the most fit guys on the team, but doesn't have a lot of size. He has a tremendous amount of speed, but when he wants to turn it on, he can play with anybody.
Now, when he got that hit and no penalty resulted of it, he had some very strong words post-game about that. How have people in St. Louis responded to his response to player accountability?
Yeah, I think, Andy McDonald is probably one of the most outspoken players on the team in a lot of areas, but particularly in the area of, the questionable hits. And, he's been a victim of a couple of them. But I think that he felt Gagliardi should have faced a little more than he did, the 2-minute penalty.
Right.
And he spoke out about it. And I think people around the league are appreciative of players who are speaking out against their own, because there's a lot of, Shanahan bashing or league bashing. But Andy's one of those guys who also points out that, hey, we have it in our hands to correct this problem, and we need to do a better job of this. And I think people, for the most part, respect that.
Patrick Berglund is having a nice playoffs for the Blues so far. He's got 6 points in 4 games. He's drafted 25th overall in the 2006 entry draft. Is this postseason going to be his coming out party?
Well, the Blues have been, waiting for a coming out party for a couple seasons now. And Patrick Berglund, I think, had a decent season last year. But then he went to the World Championships for Sweden. I think he was second in the tournament in scoring. And that put a lot of pressure on this year to be that sort of breakout year. And he struggled offensively. I think, what did he finish with, 19 goals? But Ken Hitchcock pointed out that Patrick Berglund was hung up too much on the numbers, and he needed to be more involved in kind of just the team aspect. Go out and play, let's win some games, and the points will come. And I think that happened for Patrick Berglund. He didn't light it up with the points, but he became a solid player who the team could count on. And now that we're here in the postseason, we joked around with Patrick Berglund about this the other day. This is like the World Championships for Sweden. Now you're talking NHL playoffs, and he's ramping up his level. He's been, I would think, one of the Blues' top 2 or 3 players so far in this series. It's easy to judge it based on his point total, but all around, getting in front of the net, even when he's not putting up points, he's been tremendous. So I think, to answer your question, the Blues are hoping that the way he is playing now is something that he could carry over into the regular season next year.
Jeremy, we're going to get you on this question, but it was announced on Friday that the NHL is moving forward with the sale of the Blues to Tom Stillman, who's the minority share partner for St. Louis right now, and he has quite the group that's backing him, and read about that in your St. Louis Post-Dispatch today. But the question I have is, how will this impact the Blues moving forward? Like, will this group really give them the kind of wherewithal to move up to being an upper echelon team in terms of what they do?
Well, the best way I can answer your question, because no one knows exactly what they're going to be able to do, what kind of resources they're going to be able to provide until they get in here and actually talk. And that may come next week. There's kind of some scuttlebutt that'll all get finalized and approved by the Board of Governors, and we'll have a press conference this next week. But what are they going to be able to do? We don't know. The one thing, I can say is that NHL teams these days, kind of the middle ring, are going for $150, $160, $170 million. I think Buffalo was $178. So it's not Toronto here. But, that's kind of the price of a team. Well, Tom Stillman and his group came in, and they got a deal done in the 132 neighborhood. And, you know, in talking to sources close to Stillman's group, you know, hey, if you really want the team, and I'm talking back when there was competition for it with Matthew Hulsizer and those guys, you know, why don't you offer more? Why don't you offer 150, 160? Well, they didn't want to overpay for the team and put themselves in a position where they couldn't keep it going and add to it and bring some pieces in to help it. So I think they got it at a price that they were comfortable with, and now the hope among Blues fans is that they're able to come in, and however this Blues team finishes in the playoffs, they're able to address some needs in the off season and keep this thing going.
Okay, Jeremy, I lied. There's one more question because you just led into it. Is there a chance, what do you think that this team can do in the playoffs? Do you think this team is built to win the Stanley Cup this year?
Well, it's hard to read. You know, going into these playoffs, I would have said no. I don't think that they're, you know, legit contenders this year, that they have a really good shot of being in the Cup Finals. But I think with the way the playoffs have developed, with some of the top seeds having a tough time, Vancouver, now they could come back in that series. And if L.A. wins, they're going to be a formidable opponent. But I think when you see them lose, when you see Detroit get knocked out, the Blues had a tough time with Detroit this year, and some other situations, I think the Blues have as good of a chance as anybody. Now, that's assuming they can put away the San Jose Sharks. I think that they have, like you guys said leading into the interview, they have different parts. They have it's a group effort every night out. There's not one guy that's going to go out, and if he's off, the Blues are going to lose. If he's on, they're going to win. You mentioned 13 players have a point in this series. They've blocked 26 shots in game four. They have 20-plus blocked shots in three of the four games. We mentioned the two goaltenders, one healthy. This is a group effort, and I think that's what you need in the playoffs. And, you know, I think, as I said, I think they have as good of a shot as anybody this year. And let's say they get to the second, they have a great foundation here that you come back next season, maybe you're able to address a need or two. This model was built for the long haul. That's why it's taken so long, 6-7 years since Dave Checketts and John Davidson came in here, because they wanted to put all these pieces in place. And I think now they're getting to the point where not only are those pieces in place, but the guys like Patrick Berglund are starting to play. And it's kind of all coming together for them. So if they can get a couple rounds here, I think that'd be a bonus, get them more experience. And I think you're going to hear about the Blues for a couple years now.
All right, Jeremy. Well, thanks very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We enjoyed having you. We enjoyed seeing you this year, and we'll hopefully see you again next year.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I always enjoy talking to you.
Okay. That's Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We're going to head to break. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your temporary host, David Minuk, joined in studio by Michael Remus and Darren Bomming. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will have to make in life. Don't leave that decision to an amateur. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129, or follow him on Twitter at David Carr, C-A-R-R, Winnipeg. And then first caller to 780-1290 will win a complimentary consultation with David. So make sure you get that call in and you can win.
David Carr, great. I know he's helping Richard looking
he
for
is.
A place.
He is. He's giving Richie a lot of help trying to find him a home.
Uses social media to help it out. I gave him a follow.
Did you?
David Carr, WPG.
There we go. That's what you have to do.
If you're real estate's a scary world. Make sure you get a pro like David.
There we go. You know, Darren, nice plug from Darren as well. But let's talk hockey. This is what we're about. And we're going to talk about the series that actually is on right now. They just finished singing the national anthem, and that would be Washington and Boston. So, guys, just your preliminary thoughts. I mean, we're 2-2 in the series, and not many people expected it to be this even. Darren, what are your initial thoughts on this series?
Well, Brandon Holtby, like I said earlier, I can't say enough about this kid. He seems to be that story that happens every year in the playoffs. A young kid comes in and is definitely making waves, sparkling numbers. He's really kept Washington in this series. You know, that one goal that he let in that was iffy was that overtime winner to the Bruins in the first game there. And since then, he's been essentially, he looked very veteran to me.
Well, you know, it's interesting, actually, that Claude Julien shook up his lines. He literally shook up all four lines today and had mixed them up. He had Lucic with Rolston and Krejci. He had Bergeron playing with Peverly. It was just, it's just interesting. I'm not going to go through the whole line, but especially because they're on right now. But it was just, it's not often that you see a veteran coach do that radical a change when it's 2-2. But I guess he feels, where's the offense? Where is his team? You know, this series, much like some of the other ones, has been very, very low scoring. I mean, they've got 14. This is the lowest scoring series in the entire Stanley Cup playoffs. So, I mean, that in of itself is a worry for a coach who's wondering where the power is going to come from. Reem?
Well, after the game, you know, it's obvious that Boston threw a lot of shots on the net. I think they had about 40-ish shots on Holtby. But Tim Thomas, you know, the goaltender for Boston, called out his team and said, hey, we're not getting enough quality chances. You know, we're not getting in front of that and banging in those dirty goals. And I don't know what you guys think, but do you think that Tim Thomas, who has been, you know, a bit of a polarizing figure this season, should be calling out his defending Stanley Cup champion squad?
Well, I think he's looking across the ice at a young Brandon Holtby, being the veteran that Tim Thomas is, and he's saying, how come this guy is keeping them in games like I'm doing for my team? We need to, you know, put some traffic in front of him a little bit, and you know, Holtby has been remarkable.
It's interesting in the sense, I didn't feel that he was calling out his teammates. Like, I mean, he really was just saying, we just need to block shots.
Right,
Andrei Pavlik has said the same thing to us, you know, following a Jets game. And you don't think of it as it's constructive criticism. I mean, yeah, could it be kept internal? Could the team? But it's not something that anybody who's watching the game, you know, oftentimes, you know, we would ask, I don't remember who was being interviewed. And he said, well, what did you, it was one of the guys, I won't say who, but one of the reporters was saying to Claude Noel after a game, you know, what could be done differently? And he goes, well, you're watching the game. You know just as well as I did. You watched 60 minutes. So the reality is that, I guess what I'm saying is that Thomas didn't say anything that was so offensive. He didn't call out a particular player and said, you need to step up. He said, this is what the team needs to do. And I really don't think there was anything wrong with that.
I think maybe something needed to be said about that. But when you have Tim Thomas calling out a guy, it's kind of iffy. I don't know if he should be doing that.
Well, the one area that the Bruins definitely need to improve on is power play scoring. They're 0 for 12. They have, you know, they're struggling, obviously. They've got no goals in their power play. The power play is completely ineffective. And the question is, can they beat the Capitals without an effective power play? Darren, what do you think?
Well, it always comes down to special teams. And, you know, if they're not able to score on the power play, they've got to make sure to shut down Washington's power play opportunities on the other side of things. You know, I haven't looked at the special teams numbers in this series, but, you know, it goes, you know, one way for the other, for Tad, as they say. You know, if one team can't score on the power play, they got to make sure to shut down the other team's power play opportunities.
Huge scrum in this game right now. We're watching Washington and Boston. And that's really, you know, where Boston made their mark last year in the playoffs. They have these chippy guys like Lucic and Marchand who need to step up their physical play and really get in the opponent's face, you know, after whistles. It really does throw a team off.
Well, you know what? Again, this is an interesting stat. I was looking at who has controlled the play, who has had the lead. And in this series so far, the Bruins have had it for 14 minutes of the entire series. The Capitals have had it for 54 minutes, and it's been even for 194 minutes. So really, it's not a two. Again, this is a 2-7, and the Capitals, really, considering how they have really fell on the expectations. Like, this team was supposed to win the Southeast Division handily. Not they had a chance to win it in the, you know, going down the stretch. This team was supposed to blow everyone out of the water. It wasn't supposed to be Florida Panthers. It wasn't supposed to be the Winnipeg Jets. It wasn't supposed to be Tampa. It was supposed to be the Washington Capitals. This team is supposedly a Stanley Cup contender. I say supposedly because every year we're told that Washington is going to, you know, the Sea of Red is going to erupt and they're going to become, you know, the Hershey Bears. Because
right. How many President's trophies did they have to win before, you know, they finally take a deep run? But
so it is interesting in that regard that the Capitals have not, you know, but it's interesting, sorry, that the Bruins haven't overtaken the Capitals, and it's been fairly even. So again, I kind of go back to, you know, when I called the Capitals in seven, I didn't think the Capitals were going to overrun them. I thought if they could keep it even, they would have a good chance. And the truth is, as we've seen with the numbers, they've managed to do that. So it's been really interesting in that regard. Reem, anything else from this series that's kind of stood out for you?
Well, one thing for the Bruins is they haven't been able to score, and they've been missing Nathan Horton, who scored some big goals last year for them in the playoffs. He's been out with a concussion. Now, they picked up Brian Ralston at the deadline. You know, he's kind of older player, but he does bring that Stanley Cup experience that he has with New Jersey. But, you know, someone on the Bruins is going to have to step up and make a run. They're kind of like a better version of St. Louis, and all their players can score, but it's not going to come, you know, from one guy, but Bergeron, Marchand, Lucic, these guys got to bring their, you know, as Claude Noel likes to say, their A game if they mm-hmm. want to take this one.
You know, the other thing on the other side of the ledger, of course, is the play of Alex Ovechkin. It really does rest on his shoulders right now, whether he, you know, if there is something wrong or if Bruce Boudreau is trying to send a message. No, I mean, Dale Hunter, sorry, not Bruce Boudreau. But, you know, it's just a function of whether there's a message trying to be sent to his star player saying, you need to be better. He's the points leader for the series right now with one goal and three assists. You know, that's obviously not a huge testament to having 4 points and being a points leader in the series. But really, you know, if with the exception of Semin and Backstrom, those are the guys that they need to be lights out. And, you know, Mike Green also didn't play a lot in that third period. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And, you know, I'm not expecting much. I'm expecting it to go 7, and we'll see what happens.
I'm expecting the series to go 7-2. You can't say enough about Brooks Like, you know, a guy who didn't put up big numbers in the regular season, but man, as he emerged, he's got, you know, 4 points in 4 games, you know, and he's got, you know, half as many shots on goal as Alexander Ovechkin, but able to put up the same amount of points. He's somebody I've really seen emerge in this series. But yeah, I see it going 7 as well. It's
right.
Just too tight.
Well, that is going to end our talk of the Bruins and the Capitals. We're going to head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Oh, yeah. 741. Oh, no, it's not. What is this, Tim? Strokes confused me there.
We're back. Remus is worrying about the music, but we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've got half an hour to go in the show. It's been a great one so far. I've got Michael Remus, and you can follow him at M Remus. And I've got Darren Bombing, and Darren, you can follow you at D Bombing.
At Darren Bombing.
At Darren Bombing, and myself, the host, at IC Dave.
If you have trouble, Google that. Just Google the name.
Okay, well, there you go.
I was going to say, the funny thing about Darren is he spells it D-A-R-R-I-N. You know, there's many different ways. You know, the Jets in the mid-90s had 3 players named Darren.
That's right.
On their team, and they all spelled it the different way.
I remember I had a girlfriend named Shannon, and obviously our favorite player was Darren Shannon.
Well, wow. That
it was romantic, wasn't it?
That was interesting.
Romantic times in junior high.
For those trivia experts, other Darren's, Darren Quint.
Yeah.
Well, that's Daron.
D-E-R-O-N.
That's right.
And I drew a blank on the other one. Hold on.
Oh, my face is Darren Poopa.
Oh, Darren Poopa. Well, he spells D-A-R-E. Sorry, it's Darren Turcotte.
Darren Turcotte, and you got Darren Pang. You got the Panger,
all right,
of course.
Well, let's get back from the Darren-isms right now.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
We're going to finish talking about a couple more series. First up is the former Winnipeg Jets 1.0, the Phoenix Coyotes, as their present incarnation is known. And they're taking on the Chicago Blackhawks in Phoenix. And the question for you, I have for you guys is, will the whiteout be successful?
Well, it's working so far. They're up 3-1 in this series. They've put up 3 goals in every single game. And with Mike Smith manning the net, you know, you can't count this team out. Chicago, you know, has come back late, but they just can't seem to keep pace with Phoenix offensively, at least, you know, through the full 60 minutes.
It's funny. I was going to go. I know it's funny that Mike Smith has been such a farce. Or force for Phoenix.
I was like, I hope he's not a farce. Otherwise, that wouldn't be so good.
He's been so, you know, in the beginning of the season, Richard said, you know, Mike Smith isn't going to cut it for Phoenix. And he's been a pleasant surprise. But he took that hit from Andrew Shaw. Were you surprised that he came back so quickly? You think he's hiding something there?
It surprised me a little bit. When he got hit, it really seemed to really crank his neck.
He
really
stayed down for about 5 minutes.
He did, and, you know, some people have said, well, look how he's come back, and he's been able to play great. Maybe he was, you know, trying to draw a penalty, or he's diving or something. That hit looked pretty legit to me. His head really took a spin, and, you know, I've been surprised, too, with the way he's been able to come back from that and play solid.
He's another goaltender, though, who's benefiting from a system. I mean, Dave Tippett is an excellent coach. Year after year, he makes do with not a lot. And Mike Smith is a beneficiary of that, and you really are seeing it now. I mean, his numbers so far for the playoffs, he's got a 2.18 goals against, and he's got a .939 save percentage. So he's been pretty good. He's been, and you know what? And the truth is, the Hawks really are the ones who the offense has completely gone missing. And as Remus mentioned earlier, the discussion in Chicago is whether they're going to go to Ray Emery and whether they're going to bring him in as the starter. And Reem, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that Corey Crawford led in two goals in overtime, consecutive overtime games that he'd like to have back to Mikkel Boedker. So, you know, Ray Emery, he does have playoff experience. You know, he's a little, I don't know, all over the place sometimes. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. But he has playoff experience. He went to the Cup Finals with Ottawa. And I think the one intangible that you shouldn't forget about is playoff experience for those veteran players. So, some, you know, in Vancouver, they shook up the goaltending. I think, maybe they should go for it. Why not? See what you have there.
I think right now anything might be better than Corey Crawford. He's been so shaky at times. He's let in some really, really shaky, rough goals. I think, you know, you might as well. You're down 3-1 in the series. Let's give the backup a shot. You know, whether he's been shaky or not in the past, you don't know. He's a veteran, so throw him in there and see if you can get some goaltending out of him.
So, I mean, this is obviously going further than one series will merit, but what happens if the Coyotes win? Do you think that this is going to result? Because the negative with terms of the crowd, even if they're a whiteout or whatnot, is the fact that a lot of the assertion has been that the fans who show up are fans of the Chicago Blackhawks, or, as was the case with the Detroit Red Wings, was a lot of transplanted Northerners who are going to these games, still supporting their teams. But now we're seeing, like, it's a total whiteout. We're not seeing a lot of mixed jerseys. Is this team going to turn a corner? I mean, we keep thinking that there's issues going on in Glendale. Somehow they you know, Shane Doan has managed, as he says, he just kind of, they make a joke of it. That's the interesting thing. Like, you have to laugh. It's one of those situations that's become comical. If you don't laugh about it, you're just going to panic and you're going to work yourself over. And the truth is, these players have no impact on what happens outside of the arena. So they can't allow it to impact the way they play the game. But it's just interesting to see that these guys are, you know, poised to win their first series in the history of the Phoenix Coyotes.
Well, I think if you're a professional athlete, you show up to work and you give it 100% regardless. That may be a cliche, but these guys are paid millions of dollars to play hockey, and I think they go to work and they play hockey whether there's 7,000 fans or 17,000 fans. You know, even in Winnipeg, where it's so hard to get tickets to the MTS Center to watch the Jets, you still see Boston Bruins fans, mm-hmm. Philadelphia Flyers fans, Washington Capitals fans, a division rival of the Jets for this year and next. You still see them there, and that may be because there hasn't been NHL hockey here in, you know, well over a decade. But in Phoenix, whether it's transplanted hockey fans or, you know, Arizonans who have grown a love for hockey over the last 15 years of having an NHL franchise there, regardless, I think, you know, it's people who want to go to the games. And, you know, Phoenix has really benefited from a huge marketing push. They're spending the dollars, which is surprising, but they're continuing to spend the dollars in their marketing campaign. You look at their website, I've heard that the newspapers are smattered with advertisements as well as local radio there. So if they can get the people out to watch the games, I don't think it's going to help or hinder Phoenix as far as their level of play.
I think last year we all saw the Coyotes were, you know, minutes away from moving here. And I think it was a bit of a distraction to the team. I mean, they got bounced, four games by Detroit. I remember we were watching the game celebrating, yeah, Phoenix is going to come here. I mean, well, ultimately, they didn't come here and were saved. But I think having gone through that last year, that, you know, constant will they, won't they, that's always in the news. I think, you know, that going through last year along with Dave Tippett, they've really been able to put that on the back burner and come out and play some, you know, their style of hockey.
Well, you know, and the other thing also is that came out right in the first round against Detroit. And it was like, now they have to talk about this and they have to talk about, you know, they can't just talk about hockey. Here, you know, obviously it's always going to be present, but really they're focused on the Chicago Blackhawks and beating the Chicago Blackhawks. And like I said, it should be really interesting to see how this team and the fan base, because the truth is, and as much as we malign them and as much as we, you know, cast aspersions on this fan base, the same as what happened in Atlanta. The reality is you're always going to have a very determined, very loyal, whether albeit small, fan base.
But the base is there.
The base is there. They just don't have a huge base. And the truth is you need the money. You need the plan. There's a million other things that come into play. I mean, the truth is, and Quebec City is much like us now. They're, you know, like Winnipeg was. They're kind of always excited. I've seen tweets from people in Quebec saying, oh, we're going to have a pretty good team next year. So it's, you know, it doesn't die for the Phoenix Coyotes. But all these guys can do is continue to do what they're doing, which is win. Now, do I think that they're beating an amazing team? No, they're beating right now a Chicago Blackhawks team, which hasn't seen Patrick Kane step up, hasn't seen Jonathan Toews step up, hasn't seen Patrick Sharp step up. Like, their goal scorers. Now, obviously, Toews is injured, coming off an injury.
Right.
But what I'm saying is their big guns haven't been big guns. You know, I think, what is Johnny Oduya right now, the second leading point scorer on the team?
Yeah, he's got three
team.
Assists, and he's a zero plus minus.
Yeah, so, I mean, surprising. Like, you know, the reality is that their coach, you know, Quenneville has been upset. He's let him known. I mean, losing Hossa is huge. This guy, I watched him when he was with Detroit. I watched him play, and this guy with the Penguins, and then, you know, he's phenomenal.
Well,
he's
I think
really
you can argue that this is a little bit of karma for Duncan Keith putting, you know, Vancouver's top gun in Daniel Sedin out with a vicious elbow to the face that that didn't, you know, garner any type of suspension or fine. You know, I think Joel Quenneville is, you know, to himself. Obviously, he's very animated on the bench and in those post-game interviews about, you know, dirty hits taking out his top player. But, you know, I think he's getting a taste of his own medicine because Duncan Keith did the exact same thing to another player on another top player on another team.
Well, oh, go ahead, Reese.
Okay, we haven't talked about this, but Quenneville was fined, you know, $10,000 for his comments to, in the, you know, interview on the bench and his post-game comments. $10,000, you know, that's a lot compared to $2,500 that was fined to Shea Weber.
And who's making more money?
And obviously Shea Weber is.
No kidding.
But you know, do you guys think that was fair, you know, for the $10,000 fine?
I think it was fair. I think, you know, obviously the $2,500 fine is the max to Shea Weber, and that's obviously because of, you know, a lot of stipulations in the NHLPA agreement, the collective bargaining agreement with the league, that $2,500 is the max. Obviously that money goes to a good place, you know, in the player's residual fund, but, you know, $10,000 to a coach saying something, you know, his initial response to losing his top player, I think, you know, it's going to happen, but... you know, I think these fines are there for a reason. I think the end result is that the player fines need to be a little bit more money than what they are.
All right, well, we're going to leave it there with the Chicago Phoenix series. We're going to head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Uh-huh. Turn my headphones up.
Welcome back to the program. This is the final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I am your guest host, David Manouk, joined in studio by Michael Remus and Darren Bauming. And we're doing some California Love. A little California Love, a little two-pack.
You know what?
A little West Coast hockey series going on.
You know what, Dave? I just want to say, before we start, you've been doing a great job hosting. Drew better watch out.
I appreciate that, Reem. Thank you very much.
I can't believe that it's 2:45 already. This show has flown by.
Yeah, the time has flown, but you know, we still have to talk about one series, the last series that's involving a Canadian team, the Vancouver Canucks playing the LA Kings. It is 3-1 LA. Not many expect. You know, not many expected. A lot of people expected LA to perform well. They don't have a ton of scoring, but they I think the expectation was on Vancouver. Vancouver has fallen. I think LA has risen up and taken the, you know, kind of seized the mantle, if you will.
Well, Darren? when you've got the President's Trophy winning Vancouver Canucks going against a team like LA that was so anemic offensively, especially at the end of the season, it's really surprising that the Kings were able to put up, you know, 8 goals in the first 2 games, and everyone was like, oh, taking notice of this series. You know, is it a goaltending issue? Is it not? Vancouver went and put Corey Schneider in for games 3 and 4. He's done great. He's allowed 2 goals in those combined in those 2 games, and you know, I think it's shaken up. It's shaken up the entire team a little bit when you you know, take a very highly salaried goaltender in Roberto Luongo and put him on the bench for a couple games.
Reem, what are your thoughts of this series so far?
You know, the injecting Daniel Sedin back into the lineup really changed Vancouver. They play like a different team. I mean, Henrik, you know, without Daniel Henrik, he's a pretty good player. But when you have those two guys together, I mean, you're talking about twins who've grown up together. They've played, you know, on the same line, scoring pretty much identical points, you know, until one of them got hurt for their whole careers. You don't see anything else like that in hockey, but I really think these two could come out and, you know, tie up the series. They're down 3-1. I mean, we're seeing it in Pittsburgh. You just got to, you know, the cliche goes, one game at a time, one period at a time, one shift at a time, but you really got to look at it that way. Oh, sorry. Boston's got a breakaway. Stopped again by Holby. But back to Vancouver. I think it's possible. I mean, they're a President's Trophy for a reason. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
Well, nope. David Booth is expected to be on the line with them. And apparently Cam Cole, the writer, has labeled them the three Mouth-keteers.
Mm.
So much like we have given the GST line their name, they're naming lines out in Vancouver.
Well, I don't know if that one is as flattering.
Well, Vancouver also has the Amex line of Higgins, Booth, and Kessler.
Yeah.
So I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. But it'll be interesting. The Kings are slumping a little bit. Their power play is 1-for-15 over the last three games. And it will be, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the return of both Sedins, you know, playing healthy. Can they, you know, Schneider's been fantastic this entire series. So can the Kings hold on, or will the Vancouver Canucks take this one back?
Well, the Kings are scoring goals. You know, Dustin Brown, obviously, with 4 goals and an assist in 4 games, he's really upped his game to what people, saw the potential in him. But it's the guys that you knew were going to score for the Kings. It's Justin Williams, it's Anssi Kopitar, it's Mike Richards, Jeff Carter with a couple assists, but he's among the scoring leaders on that team. The Kings are playing some great hockey. I've heard analysts who've watched the Kings all year talk about, you know, they were a very sleepy team, that they didn't really play with a lot of high energy, but it seems the playoffs, something's kicked them in the butt, because they're playing a completely different game.
You know, I love Dustin Brown. He's kind of like Ryan Callahan, the West Coast mm-hmm. version. Gritty guy, you know, he goes out, makes the big hits, takes a lot of shots, you know, has that energy, that effect on the team. I think he was one of the captains for Team USA in the Olympics. He's got the room's attention, and he's been in LA for a while, so maybe they'll pull it out at the Staples or in L.A.
I can't believe Dustin Brown was on the quote-unquote trade block this year.
Yeah.
L.A. was looking to move him, but I'm sure they're glad that they did not.
Well, that covers all the playoff action, and there will be tons of playoff action today on TV and also on TSN Radio 1290. You can listen to the Rangers and Senators. That starts at 6 p.m. our time. And now we're going to Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
You want me to read these, Dave?
Yeah, read them. You go for it.
All right. The first question for Rapid Fire, guys. Rapper Tupac was resurrected last weekend as a hologram and performed at the Coachella Music Festival in California. Fitting that we played Tupac to open this segment. You know, assuming this technology would be available for hockey players, which former NHLer would you like to see resurrected for which NHL team?
Wow.
Well, playoff teams in playoffs, so
I got an appropriate one.
Okay. This is a great question. So many possible answers, players that people would love to see on teams again. But if you're sticking to playoff teams, I would love to see Bobby Orr. Obviously, his career was cut way too short with knee injuries. I would love to see the type of offense he could create in today's NHL, carrying the puck from the back end. And, I think it would obviously give Boston the offensive kick they need right now.
I guess my definition of resurrected is a little different. If we're talking about guys resurrected,
oh, I mean, in hologram form. They can still be alive, but okay. You're going to put, you know, when they brought Tupac back, it's pretty funny.
I was thinking someone who's dead, so I'm going to go with Pelle Lindbergh and the Flyers, because, of course,
they need a goalie.
So, I mean, I think Pelle Lindbergh and for the Flyers would be the
And you're one. Bringing back him from his playing days. I mean, Tupac, when he came back, he's still 20, but rapping next to a 40-year-old Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, it was a little painful.
My pick was going to be a Brett Hull for the Blues. They need that scoring punch. Or John Van Briesbrook, he carried the Panthers, you know, against Colorado in 96. I'd like to see, they need a goal.
A little rat trick, if you will.
A rat trick. And it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. The celebrities are coming out. What's your favorite celebrity sighting so far?
I'm going with Spike Lee in New York. You used to see him at Knicks games, but he and his son were at MSG, and they were repping the Rangers wear. So right. they're pumped. They're celebratory, and it'll be interesting to see if they're back tonight.
You obviously see lots of celebrities in Los Angeles. You got Kobe Bryant, David Beckham, but Will Ferrell. I don't think you can beat Will Ferrell as far as having your roving reporter go up and have a chat with him. It really doesn't matter what he says. He's a pretty funny guy.
Every season, it seems Scott Oak is interviewing some celebrity. I remember when he did Snoop Dogg in Anaheim. Very very fun. But I feel like those LA celebrities like Beckham and Kobe, I feel like they've been given complimentary tickets, you know. But one person who is there because she wants to be there, Carrie Underwood in Nashville, husband of Mike Fisher. They had a brief 5-second shot of her after the Predators win. She looked beautiful. So hopefully we get to see more of those coming up.
I want to know if there's any politicians watching the games in Kanata, Ontario. Is anybody going out to those games?
Any MPs?
I think it's a bit too far of a drive.
Probably. They're busy. Those politicians are busy.
So the nominees for the Calder Trophy have been released. They are Gabriel Landeskog, Adam Henrique, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Is there a contest here, or should we just give the trophy to Landeskog?
You know what? It's if Nugent-Hopkins wouldn't have gotten injured, I think that he had it easy.
Well, he was tied for the rookie lead in scoring, so, despite missing those games.
Yeah, so I Landeskog's just a beast, though. So I mean, he would seem to be the guy who's the popular favorite at this point.
If this was a hindsight question, and we're putting ourselves, say 8-10 years into the future, I would want Landeskog. I think he's going to have the more complete type of game. He's a physical player, and you know, for 18 or 19 years old, however he is, he does not look like a rookie on the ice.
So, and we're talking about rookies, but now let's talk, move over to the veterans. Which of these players are most likely to come back for next season? We got Lidstrom, Alfredsson, Brodeur.
I'm going to have to say, I don't know, it's a tough one. I would say Brodeur. I think that he's just got the competitive fire. I think he thinks he can still play for at least a year or two. You know, you see Dwayne Rolison, he's still playing. Well, we don't know if he's still playing, but it'll be interesting. I think Brodeur, Lidstrom, again, like I talked about earlier, I don't know, but I think that you might see, it's a toss-up really with any of those three players.
I'm going to disagree and argue to the absolute opposite. I think Marty Brodeur is probably the least likely out of these three. We talked earlier about Lidstrom coming back for that game at the University of Michigan Stadium to play in front of 100,000 people for someone who's achieved so much in his career. That's something that not a lot of players get a chance to. But I think Daniel Alfredsson is the most likely to come back. I think he's got the most gas in the tank. And a team like Ottawa, the way they've been playing against the Eastern Conference division or Eastern Conference leading New York Rangers, having this series at 2-2, I think he wants to come back and take a run with some of these young guns on his team.
It's playoffs, and this is where we break out the playoff traditions. We got a bunch of them on display this season. Which is your favorite? We got octopus, rats, catfish, beards, whiteouts, national anthems. Take your pick here. Let's go.
I'm going with the octopus. I love it. You know, I went to a lot of Red Wings games when I was down in Michigan, so I would go with the octopus. The whiteout is no longer a Jets tradition, so I'm not a proponent of it anymore.
The beards are across the league. It's essentially a tradition that has bled across the entire National Hockey League. The whiteout, obviously, some people in Winnipeg like to say it was stolen, but continued on in Phoenix. The rats, the octopus. I like the national anthems. They can be so black and white. Sometimes they are just atrocious bad. Other times they're really good. So I like those national anthem traditions that a lot of the teams carry on. It really sets the tone and the mood for some playoff hockey that we all love.
You know, Darren, I was going to agree with you. I love the national anthems. And the great thing about, you know, when it's an American team and a Canadian team, we all remember in Edmonton and Calgary or Ottawa, they would just hold the microphone up and the whole crowd would sing. And I think that's pretty powerful and everyone loves their country.
All right. Well, that was rapid fire. And now we are going to cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
All right, Reem, who are you cheering and jeering today?
I got a cheer, and it's a bit of a public service announcement. EA Sports has done this with the Madden series, and they brought it on to the NHL series. You can vote for your favorite NHL superstars to be on the cover. So for the Jets, the nominee is Evander Kane. So go to covervote.nhl.com and vote for Evander Kane to be on the cover of NHL 13. That would be very cool.
Darren?
My cheer, Jonathan Quick. Coming on a team that was so offensively anemic, as I said earlier, in the Los Angeles Kings, Johnny Quick has shut down such an offensively powerful team in the Vancouver Canucks. 7 goals in 4 games, and I think he's the reason that they have a stranglehold on this series.
Well, I'm going to save my cheer for the usual host of the Leo Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel,
who is
having his nuptials take place this weekend in Kentucky. So we're going to send all the best to Drew and the guys who are in Kentucky. Hopefully they're going to enjoy themselves. And hopefully you've enjoyed listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. I'm David Minuk, the host, Michael Remus, and Darren Bauming.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Follow us on illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve or on Facebook /IllegalCurve. This has been the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Thank you and enjoy the playoffs.
You've been
listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. You're a